Welcome to the Human Performance Podcast. Here we talk about everything to do with human performance and how leaders and organizations can get the best out of themselves and their people. I'm your host, Alex Young. My guest on the podcast this week is Susan DiLorenzo. Susan is a life coach who focuses on helping people who are emerging from life-altering adversities and guides them to evaluate the insights and wisdom that such times hold. As a survivor of invasive breast cancer, whose marriage dissolved as treatment ended, Susan draws upon her personal journey, as well as her training as a life coach, to give clients and listeners the mindsets and tools to rebuild their lives in alignment with their deepest desires. We discuss overcoming adversity, staying positive, and what's essential in order to transform an adversity into a win. Hi, Susan. Welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
Hey, Alex. Great to be here. Doing great.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on this week. And you're someone who has an absolutely amazing story and one which, you know, I, being a sort of ex-medic, are particularly interested in. And it'd be fantastic for you just to introduce yourself to everybody listening and watching.
Be happy to. Well, I first describe myself in my current role as a life coach who helps people coming out of life-altering adversities. But I'd have to back up and say what really launched this was being a survivor of invasive breast cancer, whose marriage ended just months after treatment ended. And it looked like the universe was kicking my butt. But I came to learn that it was actually cleaning my house. And I if you had told me along the way that that was how life can work, you know, we all have little messages that come in and we go, not now, I didn't sign up for that, I'm on this track, you know, and we push them away because they're very inconvenient. And what can happen is they elevate until your life can actually blow up. And that can really throw us off when we try to go back and recreate what we had sometimes instead of really taking the wisdom and insights that reflection comes from these moments. It doesn't happen, you know, you hear about wake-up calls, but there's something slower that happens where little insights and wisdoms come. I call that the gems of adversity. And you can take these and build your life anew on an elevated platform. You take those little things you didn't want to listen to before, and you use them to build something new. But it's going to depend on a vision, your focus, and your belief systems. So those are three huge things I love to work with people on, and not stay in the story. Don't stay in the story. Don't use your past to define your future.
So. And for you personally, you know, those are huge life-changing events that happened to you, you know, seemingly out of the blue. What was your background before that happened?
I was what I love to refer to lovingly as a corporate cubicle worker. And I loved the people I worked with. I dressed up, I showed up, but inside I was like, man, I'm bored. You know, and yet I was at the time after the divorce, a single working parent who wanted the healthcare, wanted, you know, the regular paycheck, and thought, well, I already know how to do this. I'll just keep doing this. But inside I was not showing up fully. And I think it showed on some respect too. So yeah, I worked in the financial industry. And like I said, great people. It was never about the people. Great messaging. But it wasn't my message. It wasn't something I aligned with. So really part of this awakening for me was being brave enough, because we're called to be brave in adversity, aren't we? And what if we took that bravery, that one that you had to, you know, you either fall apart or you stand up and you just deal with it, right? So what if you took that in a new stage without even having to have your life blow up and use that as your time to be brave without all the mess?
And I mean, it'd be very interesting. I mean, as a former doctor, I've had to break bad news to people. Mm. I did orthopedic surgery, so you know, bone cancers and things like that. And obviously, medics are trained somewhat to break bad news and display empathy. But it'd be really interesting hearing from your side as a patient receiving that news and how that sort of affected you.
Well, the first time I heard it, I literally put myself in the grave. There was no, oh, gee, what stage is that? You know, it just went to absolute bam. I'm gone. I have an 18-month-old boy. I was fearing that he would not remember me and know how much I loved him. The reason I went there, my mother lost her mother when she was 18 months old. And so I absolutely thought, oh God, family tradition. And my mother also had breast cancer at the same age, age 38, in the same breast. So it just felt like this horrible trajectory that I was like, no. And so I just cried all, and I didn't even get to like drive home or have somebody drive me home. I had to get on the commuter rail because I worked in Boston at the time, just went to a regular, appointment, thought, oh, it's nothing. They're just going to do a needle biopsy and everything's fine. And it was just, that was just the small cancer. I didn't find out about the big C until I went back for a checkup and was with a radiation oncologist who agreed with me, no, you don't need radiation on this. It wasn't that bad. But has anybody talked to you about the lump in your right breast? And that's the one that took me down the rabbit hole of nope, it's invasive. It's, it's a big job. It's a year out of your life at least. And I was so busy as a parent working, taking care of an 18-month-old. There was a book out at the time called Cancer, Breast Cancer, Let Me Check My Schedule. And so I was like, man, I don't have time for this. What are you doing? I've got the world to save. I'm holding everything together. You know, it was like my job as this modern woman to be the end all and be all and not give anything to myself. I didn't see that yet. I just thought my job was to be the person who did all the work at my job, kept the household together. We had just bought, I don't know if you've heard of that program, This Old House, but we bought it. And so everything was a constant project. I would go to bed at night and think of not all the good things I did do that day. I think, well, you didn't get to that. You didn't do this. And I would just beat myself up, let alone give myself anything good that day, other than maybe lunch with a friend. So, yeah, that was the blow up. Wasn't just the first time I heard it. That was the knife in the heart, though. And by the time I got to the invasive breast cancer diagnosis, I was much more even about, okay, what's the stage? What do I want to believe versus, there's a great saying about there are the facts and then there's the truth. They're the facts of a diagnosis, what's going on in your life. But when we make that bigger than the truth of who we are, we're doing ourselves a great disservice, and we're actually doing everyone around us a great disservice. So it was a real moment of, okay, you say you have a faith, you say you believe in something, let's put it to work here. And I had to do a lot of, it was, nice reading about spirituality, listening to inspiring speakers. But okay, now the rubber meets the road here. And I've got something that's scaring me to death. And that wasn't even until I got to the idea of divorce and living on doing all this on my own. So I started journaling and I started praying more. I started using visualization. So we can get more into that later. But yeah, there was a process of going from I'm going to die to I'm going to live and it's going to be okay.
And it's interesting, whenever I've spoken to people who've been through, similar circumstances where, seemingly kind of up to that point, everything was very either, work focused or, they were sort of driving ahead with one thing that they were obsessed with. And then suddenly something comes out of nowhere. It gives them a real different perspective on everything that they were kind of pursuing and holding important before. Was that the same case for you?
Yes, it was really like that book title, right? Let Me Check My Schedule. because we think we have these all important things that we're being judged on, and yes, you did it, good for you, you are promoted or whatever. But then life has a different idea, and I wasn't taking care of myself. I was the sidekick in my own life story. I wasn't the main character. And that's what it took to make me lie down in a bed and reflect, especially, you know, days after chemotherapy or radiation, where I had no, I couldn't even focus on reading or watching any kind of a movie. I just had to lie there. I could play music, but there was a lot of time of just being with myself, being with my spirit. And it was so, I want to say gentle. It was a gentle experience. It wasn't like, oh, you better reflect on your life. It was the beauty of a presence that I didn't take time to notice. And that presence was with me and in me. And it really did guide me into a new way of being. So when I got the report, you are now cancer-free, we think we got it all, I was like, I get a do-over and I am going to do this so much better with listening to me and putting myself in the driver's seat, honoring joy in myself. And what do I want? And what am I done with, right? What am I not going to pick up that I keep thinking was mine? That was huge.
It's absolutely amazing. And I think, you know, we always talk about human performance on this podcast and everything that I do. But I think, you know, surviving and overcoming any type of cancer is probably the peak of human performance in, you know, having the mental aptitude and then also going through, you know, the physiological treatments, like you mentioned, chemo and radiotherapy and just kind of, you know, keeping going. In terms of, you know, you mentioned your divorce and things like that, and having a sort of a support system is so important for anyone with any sort of illness or going through hard times. Can you talk about how that, you know, kind of potentiated everything that was happening at the time for you?
I absolutely can. And you know how we were saying that things come from insights? None of this stuff just landed on me right away. It's through the years, through the reflection. And the one thing that really landed on me about the demise of my marriage at the show, so shortly after hearing I'm cancer-free, it was like 4 months later, I barely had any hair on my head, and I'm being told that my mate wants to live alone, right? And I really believe it's because I was so elated about being alive. I wasn't just in this monotone way of living that could support someone who I did know had depression, right? And I didn't even know, I've heard the current term codependent. I never put it on myself. But here I am, I always made it okay for whatever, walking on those eggshells. But I was so happy, I just didn't want to deal with eggshells anymore. I was starting to travel and visit family. I'm like, it was the I'm Alive tour. and it was making it more and more uncomfortable for both of us to be in the same house. You know, the idea of somebody being, you know, excited about their life while another is just like, no, there's nothing to be excited about here. I, you know, whatever, for whatever reason on this poor guy's part. So it made it to the point where this part had to go too. It started, you know, I said the universe was cleaning my house. That's exactly what that was like. And I didn't have to say anything. It wasn't comfortable for me, but he got to it first. He saw something I couldn't see first. I just installed myself like a puzzle piece into this. I learned later, boy, did I ever grow up with a parent who had depression? So all I had to do was take my role and like a puzzle piece and put it into another scenario with a mate. Like, oh, I know how to do this. This is my job. So when it was no longer my job and I wasn't doing my job, I think it was easy for him to say, nope, this isn't fitting anymore. And I'm even more miserable because of the comparison. The mirror I'm holding up now is just so different than the one I used to hold up for him that said, everything's okay, you're fine, I'm fine.
And, you know, certainly when you were sort of getting through your cancer and overcoming it, and then you had this new outlook on life, how did you, you know, go about instigating kind of other changes that sort of led you to where you are now?
The first changes, and I think this is true for a lot of us, can be kind of superficial. I had the joy. I kept the job for many years, especially around being a single parent. I just thought those golden handcuffs were very important. So that didn't come until much later. But I changed the way my house looked. I cleaned it out. I said yes to more opportunities of being social. I ended up falling in love again with somebody who was so kind and loving. It was like a three-year relationship that I got to see myself through the eyes of love. I didn't get there right away. I did have huge fears. You know, I had a mastectomy and reconstructive surgery. It wasn't like I wanted to run out and show everybody my naked body even before then, but now it was like, it's a roadmap. It's a Michelin map out there. So it took a lot of trust, right? And this person, this wonderful guy, met me there and made me feel so comfortable and loved that it set the tone for what I attracted going forward. And initially, just bringing it into myself and saying, I am beautiful. I am beautiful no matter what happened to me. And that was a big moment for me that I could shine a light of beauty and not poor self-esteem, low confidence, poor expectations, because that does show through the human eye. And when we can change the channel in our mind, it reflects out of our entire body, but especially through our face.
And yeah, I've seen you sort of mention a few times, you know, things like adversity being a delivery system to greater awareness. Can you kind of expand on sort of, you know, what you mean by that in the context of some of the things you've been through?
Yes. So, you know, I spoke about little and then big insights landing over time. So that's a little different than a wake-up call, because you can hear the similarity in those two phrases. But a system is more that they don't just come landing on you all of a sudden. You stay with the vision you have for your life, and more will come up to say, well, this isn't like your vision, is it? Your poor self-esteem, your disorganizing, your whatever it is for you, right? That is a system that stays in place, and it's still in place, because if we say yes, it's like turning on a computer, right? It's going to serve us as long as we keep it on. So here we're curious. We want those gems, and we're staying aware and awake to two things, our longing and our discontent. Those are spiritual signals that are going to be a part of the system saying you're on track or it doesn't feel right. We're a little off track. And you'll notice both thoughts serve where you want to go. Back when I was working in the corporate world, I would say things to myself like, how much longer do I have to do this? As if there was some God, you know, some big guy in the sky going, okay, 3 more months and I'm going to get you a new job. So that wasn't going to happen. But I kept waiting for permission or some benevolent being to get me out of here. And it had to be me. So these are the things that start to land from longing and discontent. You see somebody else doing something you would love. And you say, man, I would love to do that too. And that's just those simple, that is the delivery system that we want to sign up for and benefit from. And sometimes we're going to get mad at ourselves and go, wow, I know what I know, but I'm not acting on it. And there's a little bit of fear, lack of confidence, a little worry. You're just pushing the edge of what you've never done before. That's all it is. It really is a paper dragon. And it looks so real. It's telling you, man, you don't know what you're doing. And then you push through it. You finally made yourself do it. And you look back and go, wow, you know, it really wasn't so bad. And I did it. And maybe next time I'm going to do it like this. So that's what I mean by delivery system.
And I'd be really interested to get your opinion on why do you think, you know, some people who kind of go through their lives and maybe don't encounter the kind of like levels of adversity that you and many others have kind of encountered, and they don't sort of realize that, you know, actually everyone is technically dying. You're only here for a, you know, certain amount of time. You've got to do some of the things like you were talking about, like, you know, optimizing your life and doing what kind of makes you happy. Why do you think, like, we as humans need these sort of almost like wake up calls or these kind of rechecks to remind us of that?
That's a great question. We call it the default system. We're on just like you let that computer run. Here's another computer example. you're just letting it run. It's cleaning up your viruses. It's doing this for you and that for you. But until you're engaging with it and making it do what you want it to do, it's just going to keep running. And that's how we can wake up to the same stuff, different day, for years and years. There's a great saying that some people live 99 years, while some others live the same year 99 times. And that really was going to be the trajectory of my life unless I got involved with it. So it's bringing to consciousness and facing those paper dragons. And can I add, getting help? We don't have to do this alone. I didn't do it alone. Boy, the first thing I did was speak with a therapist, first in marriage counseling, and we both got really clear on where we wanted to move forward. And then personally finding out, wow, I am a codependent with people with depression. I didn't know that. And I'd like to plug somebody else's book here, which saved me so much time and gave me great understanding. It's a woman named Anne Sheffield. And the book is called How You Can Survive When They're Depressed. And it's talking about people who live with people with depression as depression fallout. That we're the people that surround them and keep taking the hits or the support system, the eggshell walkers, to make sure, you know, your husband's okay, your mom or dad's okay. And it is exhausting work. And we always get a pass fail on how we did inside. And so to let that go through therapy and understanding was one of the biggest gems I could haul away with me from this time.
No, that's absolutely amazing. And you know, having been through all of these things and got to the point where you are now, if there are people listening who, you know, might themselves be going through something similar or know someone who is, what advice would you give to them about how they can turn their adversity into a win for them in their life?
Own the experience. It's something we want to make outside of ourselves, but without any blame. Because it's easy to find blame in some cases, depending on the adversity. Say, this is all mine. This has been given to me. It's in my field of awareness. And I am the center of the experience. I'm not the experience. Because we want to make it that, you know, I am the adversity, you know, that this cancer is happening to me. And I'll switch that and say, it's happening for me. What if this was all happening for you and me? It changes your perspective. And one of my mentors broke up the word circumstance in a way that I just love. So we divide the word circumstance in two. We have the word circum, around, and stance. You are in the middle of what is circling around you. You're not the experience, but you have full view of it, and you are the central character of the experience. So who do you want to be? And a lot of times when we're in adversity, and let's say you're holding out your right and left hands. And in the left hand is the dreaded outcome. And that's the one we've been trained to focus on, right? That reptilian mind about fight or flight is all going, my God, I could die of cancer. I won't have any money after the divorce. What if it comes back? That's a big one for cancer survivors. And then what about if the outcome for your right hand, the desired outcome? What if you and I formulated the desired outcome, because what we focus on expands. So it doesn't mean that, like I said, you hold some facts in that left hand, but what about the potential and possibilities that are equally true? Neither thing has happened, notice, but these potentials for good you're holding in your right hand. Define those even more, because your mind went to work on all the scary details that could happen there. What if you put in beautiful details on the outcome? And that has to happen by putting yourself in the driver's seat. Fear is going to want to drive the car. And I describe fear as an upset child. Are you going to let some little kid drive your car that's crying and hungry and needs a nap? No. You buckle them up in the back seat and you say, you just take a nap back there and I'm going to drive. I know what to do. I know how to get there. And with that in mind, you're holding that right-hand vision. And yes, you are going to have some detours in the road. I'm doing a whole metaphor here. You're going to have some detours in the road. You're going to hear that little child fear crying and yelling at you, but they're in the backseat. They're not driving your car anymore. And that is taking ownership and connecting again with, I guess, your inner GPS, if we're going to keep going there, and saying, you know, I'm going to let my vision drive. There's another book I read during breast cancer that I absolutely changed how I faced every, I had like five surgeries, all right? And one of them was this mastectomy when they couldn't get all the cancer. And the in this, it was, I was about to face losing my right breast and facing myself, you know, in the mirror without a breast. And it was really the surgery alone frightened me, right? The surgery alone, but then the outcome also frightened me. And it's a book by Rebecca Zuckweiler, and I'm not going to get the title exactly right, but it's about living in your post-mastectomy body, living and loving in your post-mastectomy body. And in it, she has us go through a visualization where we are seeing ourselves in surgery. Doesn't mean you have to go gory on this, but you're seeing yourself on the gurney, you're being wheeled in, let's say there's beautiful music playing, your surgeon is smiling at you, all right, they put you in, you're in great hands, he's saying, she's doing beautifully, you hear those words, and then you hear one of his assistants saying, great work, doctor. And so you are pulling those visions from that right hand into your mind's eye. And I use that for everything else I had to go through, chemotherapy, radiation, and yes, my split from my marriage. I started to create vision boards, use journaling. I went to events where we were all sharing our dreams together. I did art. It kept feeding me and saying, no, this is my truth. These are the facts, but this is my truth. And I choose the right hand.
It's absolutely amazing hearing you sort of speak about it and your reaction and approach. I mean, if we sort of fast forward to what you're doing now, which is very much in line with helping others and coaching and passing on some of the, you know, the amazing things that you sort of discovered through your own journey. How did you kind of go about actually discovering that that was what you wanted to do? Because I guess, you know, people listening and watching might think, well, you know, I just don't know what I want to do, what I enjoy. How do you sort of, you know, go about finding that passion?
I fell upon it. You know, I was always kind of a life coach, especially after cancer. I was, you know, unofficially coaching women who were coming out of breast cancer and letting them know what my experience was and how good it could be afterwards. It didn't have to be, you know, a nasty ending chapter of your life. And so it was after I got laid off of my corporate job and I was trying to find something I loved more. It still frightened me, the idea of going out on my own. And I'd learned a lot about holistic health and taking better care of myself that I thought, oh, if I could support, you know, marketing in the holistic health market. And I started to look for things along that way. And I even went out, there's a great organization in California called the American Holistic Health Association. I thought, surely they're going to be able to direct me to all these, you know, employers on the East Coast. And they said, no, we really don't do that. But I had shared that I was a cancer survivor and I really loved their website and thought it was great. And they invited me to write an article. And I did, and it went really well. And then a few days later, I was going through Facebook feeds, and a woman named Mary Morrissey, who I'd never heard of before, popped up on my screen and said, would you like to be a speaker, a teacher, a coach? And I didn't even think. I went, sure, click. And she just spent 15 minutes. And what she was saying was she was a survivor of adversity, absolutely, and really came back from the dead. They had written her off in 6 months, and she's still around at 70 right now. So, everything she said was just banging on my heart. It was just like, I believe that. I already believe that. Yes, yes, yes. So I set up an appointment to go into the certification to become a life coach. And I had to face a major demon of investing with myself. You know, I'm a single mom. I've just lost my job. I've got a little severance. And the idea of spending money on what could just pan out to be nothing was frightening to me. But I managed to say yes. And in the saying yes, and I want to let your listeners know this too, you're going to feel some awful feelings that are trying to pull you back. For me, it was lightheadedness, nausea, like alarm bells going off. Oh my God, she's changing her life. It's going to be different. So I did say yes. I had to sit down after I gave her my credit card. My knees were knocking. And a few seconds later, this calm washed over me. And there was this voice that said, "You did the right thing." And ever since then, I knew I had, and I used that signal like to go into radio for a while and to, you know, to do anything else where either money's involved or doing something I've never done was involved. I go, oh, I got to do it. I'm feeling sick to my stomach and I'm going to pass out. So that was the start of it. Now, did I just become, you know, completely financially independent? No. But what happened was another job as contract work came up in the field I had already done, so I could keep up with my training, build a website, start getting clients, speaking in public, and I still had, you know, a bridge, this bridge from the old me to the new me. And I started talking about who I was even at this bridge job. And I noticed when I walked in as the coach and not as the corporate worker who one day wanted to be a coach, I got to see myself that way, and others approached me even on the job that way, asking me, you know, questions that a coach would be asked. So it just, and then finally that job fell away because I was holding on to it for dear life. Like, okay, I've got to have at least this much money before I can let go of this job. Well, guess what? It didn't happen that way. I got laid off, and I call that feeling scary happy because part of me knew it was time and the other part was like, are you sure it's time? So, and that same day before I left the building, I got a new client and a speaking gig, just like the universe going, Susan, I'm telling you, it's time.
That's absolutely amazing. And you know, in terms of what you do now with your clients and people you work with, around sort of life coaching and everything else, can you sort of speak to, you know, some of the common themes and things that you see that you help people with and how you sort of go about sort of helping them to overcome some of their problems?
You know, one of the biggest things I see is the belief system in self. And as a performance show, there's a great quote, you can never outperform your self-esteem, but you can raise it. So we're at only the level where we can meet ourselves. We may have bigger dreams, great visions, but until we meet them there, meet, you know, bring them into ourselves, that level of believability and facing our dragons, making ourselves, it doesn't have to be, you know, there are these quantum leap steps we can take, yes, but there are these baby steps we can take just to prove to ourselves this is how the universe works. Life meets you where you are. It's cheering us on. It goes, oh my God, she finally said yes to coaching or whatever it is. You know, I picture like the universe, this group of guides and masters going, yes, she finally did it. And I really feel that is what it is. Like, oh God, we've got to, you know, we're going to slam her with this. And it's going to wake her up. This is what she asked for on her soul journey. I'm just telling you, this is the inside of my head and how it works. But in terms of clients, that is a huge thing. When we get to the level of believability. You and I spoke a little bit earlier about the fact that I'm working on my book, Pulling the Gems from Adversity. I'm in the end of editing the manuscript. So it could be out at the end of the year. It might be next year, but it's I see the light at the end of the tunnel. But in this book, there's a section called Not Everything Can Come With You. And that's one of them. Low self-esteem, low expectations. And resentment, lack of forgiveness, holding on to the past and letting that define your future. So there's a lot of cleaning up we have to do. Even clutter in our lives, clutter in the mind. There's so much we can do that paves the way. So that's a big one, getting them in the mindset, getting them to believe that what they really want is absolutely possible. You know, sometimes we make it seem like everyone out there has something we don't. You know, you look at people and you see these rags to riches stories, right? And you think, wow, they have something I don't have. Well, the only thing they had was this, they had a level of belief and a willing to face their fear and take that next step And it's like that Indiana Jones movie, right, where he has to step over the precipice and it looks like he's going down into the chasm. Don't do it, Indy. And sure enough, right, they're telling him, nope, you got to take that step. And then what happens is this beautiful crystal step comes under his foot. And he realizes, oh, that's how it works. I've got to just keep taking these steps. And they never feel great because you're still not seeing the step, but you get the next step. And it is that you're never given the whole path. You're given the next few steps. Because why? Why is that? Because I think there's different trajectories from each step we take. And they're all rich, but they're based on where we are at the moment. And I love that because that is the magic of life. We don't have to have it all figured out. We just have to know what lights us up and put a step in that direction. And getting support is big because what's going to happen? Your mind is going to come back and remind you of all the times you failed, who you really are. You're not that good, blah, blah, blah. You know, who do you think you are? You know, and it comes up with all these reasons to think, nope, you're right. I shouldn't do this. It's dangerous. And that's where coaching comes in because we're going to remind you, you know, there was a saying in my mom's home, a friend is someone who knows your song and sings it to you when you forget it. And I think that's what a life coach is like. We get to know you. We know what your dream is. You probably, you know, some of my clients have never shared, and especially in the beginning, shared such a dream with another person because they're afraid of somebody stepping on it or hurting it. But here I am. And in full form saying, yeah, I love it. Let's do this. And it is so exciting to see somebody else see what's possible, not just through my eyes, but through their own eyes. And then what happens is the replay for me is they're sharing their wisdom with me in a way that I haven't thought of something before. And that is the mind-blowing part of my job. I'm like, oh my gosh, we're both learning together. And that is so cool.
That's absolutely amazing. And, you know, just as we sort of begin to close things out here, I'd be really interested to, you know, reflect back on your, you know, your whole journey right up to now and ask, what are some of the, you know, the biggest takeaways you've had, you know, personally in everything that you've done through, you know, throughout your journey so far?
I think it goes back to that saying that life doesn't happen to you, it happens for you. And when you have your eyes open to the idea of what's in this for me, how can I make this into something where I can walk away with some wisdom or some next steps that are informing my vision? So that was huge for me. And that never count yourself out, right? As long as you have the breath going in your body and notice it's being done for you, you can take a conscious breath. Our heart is beating, our nails are growing. We have life inside of us, and it's always for us. It's when we get out of alignment with it that it has to start flashing these warning signals at us. So when we say, yes, show me what it is I do want to know, it's going to come in subtler messages. You're tuning into that still small voice instead of the train wreck. So that for me is my biggest takeaway is I don't need giant blowups in my life because I'm listening now.
No, fantastic. And as we sort of start to close things out, obviously at the end of these podcasts and vodcasts, we always ask people who their own human performance hero is. So I'd be very interested to hear who yours is.
Yes, I love this question. I'm so glad we get to do this. And it's somebody that I loved even long before cancer came a calling, and that is Louise Hay. She is really one of the founders of the self-help movement that began with her book, You Can Heal Your Life. And Louise began as in poverty, highly, highly traumatized and abused. She became a model and married some famous guy in New York. But it was really in the 80s when she was 60 years old that she began to really live her truth and helped hundreds of thousands, I'm going to say millions of people now, started her own publishing company based on that one book. She just started bringing in other authors, and then her own radio show before she closed out her life at age 90. And I'm 60 right now. And the whole idea of having 30 more years or more to live into this vision, it's just so exciting. So she is one of my personal heroes. I just love using her as an example of what's possible in your life.
Oh, that's awesome. What a fantastic example that is. That's amazing. Susan, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today. If anyone wants to get in touch or find out a little bit more about you, where can they go to do that?
Well, first of all, thank you, Alex. It has been such a pleasure to be with you. And if you'd like to learn more about me, I'm at the website by the same name, SusanDeLorenzo.com, SusanDeLorenzo.com. And you can hop over to my Facebook page too. It's just facebook.com/DreamCoachSusan. And you'll find a lot of videos there about overcoming adversity, low self-esteem. So there's a lot of quick 5 to 7 minute videos that you might find helpful. And email is the final way, Susan@SusanDeLorenzo.com. I would love to hear from you.
Amazing. Well, Susan, thank you so much. And best of luck with the book and with everything else that you've got in store.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you. You have a great one.